Welcome to Real Flicks Reviews, like a book club. People hate reading. This month we're doing Grab Bag, so James picked the movie American Psycho. We're also doing Season 1, Episode 1 of the Netflix original Luke Cage. And this week we have Jonathan Charney, James Stevens, and Hello. Ryan Preston. So here's the description of American Psycho, made in 2000. A wealthy New York investment banker executive hides his alternative psychotic ego from his coworkers and friends as he delves deeper into his violent, hedonistic fantasies. Yep. And so I'm going to go first. I give this a 3.5.
Oh, wow.
Starting in...
Holy crap.
This, honestly, this is going to sound like a weird comparison. This reminds me of the corporate scenes of the movie RoboCop, but turned up to 11.
Okay.
Which is funny because RoboCop was a satire also.
Yeah. I'll go less. I want to see what Ryan predicts.
I love, my favorite scene, oddly enough, is the part where he stabs that guy to death. When he's listening to the music and kind of dancing and just stabs him.
What was it? It wasn't...
was it Huey Lewis in the
news?
Yeah,
it was Huey Lewis, yep.
Which is ironic. I don't know, not ironic, but it's funny as hell killing somebody to Huey Lewis. Ryan?
I gotta agree with him there.
It's one of my favorite parts of the movie is, do you like Huey Lewis in the news?
Or he's just dancing.
God damn, that's funny. So my initial rating is actually 3.5. Right. Because they're for really two particular reasons, which I won't really get into right now, but really, I mean, this movie's funny. I'll let you guys wrap up this thing now.
You know what? I'm going to jump out and I'm not going half, guys. I'm going a full 4 out of 5. There's just so much ability that Christian Bale shows in this that, I mean, to do Equilibrium 2 years later after this, who the hell looked at American Psycho and said, this guy can do no emotions? I mean, just amazing to see him in this.
Well, I think what it was is the scene where he kills a guy to Huey Lewis, and they're thinking, if he could do that, you know, without laughing, he's perfect.
Oh, he probably laughed his ass off.
And I didn't realize the world's ugliest woman, Willem Dafoe, is in this movie.
Yeah, he was a detective.
That was something
and
that was...
And Jared Leto, we were talking about him last week.
Yeah, when I saw him, I'm like, he looks familiar, and I looked him up going, that's why he's familiar.
Yep, you saw him in a dress more than once.
And actually, the most surprising thing for some reason in this movie was Christian Bale using a Glock.
Yeah.
That, to me, when I saw it, it's like, no, that can't be. It is. It really shocked me, and it's still period correct.
Yeah. Yeah. Because this was mid-'80s.
Yeah.
It was 87.
87.
Yeah, so it's about when they came out.
Yeah.
They pinpointed it with the Reagan speech.
Yeah. There you go. I mean, for me, this film, there's so much that you don't want to show people if you're like, oh, I like this film, but you just want to kind of give a disclaimer with it.
You know? Yeah, my wife, matter of fact, really hates this movie.
I'm not surprised.
She bought it and then threw it out.
Oh, wow.
And because of how busy I am, I actually had to watch it in two different parts. And I realized this movie kind of has two acts in it. Two major acts is, I would say, up to the point he kills Justin Theroux, Paul Allen. Excuse me, Timothy. No, it's Jared Leto. Yeah, excuse me, I was reading something too. And up to the killed that, and after that, he really kind of went out the deep end. And,
yeah.
By the way, can you explain to me why he called his lawyer and said, I killed a bunch of people, and the lawyer never called him back?
Well,
was out of town, and like you said, I think you should know.
Okay, well, the debate is about this film.
There's a lot of debate about this film, by the way.
The only killing that really happened was the old lady at the ATM. And
really?
Then his psychosis broke, and that's when the cop cars and everything blew up. But they debate the fact that the cops wouldn't have arrived at scene that fast, which is why they say that the Glock blowing up the cop cars wouldn't have actually happened, and that was when his psychosis actually broke. So that's one of the theories But as Ryan alluded to, there's a lot of theories.
There's a lot. There's multiple theories. Basically, like, did he kill some people? Did he kill all people? Or did he kill no people? Part of the reason why, seriously, this movie is a 3 out of 5, at least initially, is it? I, for one, I fucking hate ambiguous endings.
Yeah.
What did you want to say? And really, the other part of my 3.5 was it was a pretty one-dimensional story. Not a lot happened. There wasn't a lot of stakes other than is he going to get caught? Is he not going to get caught? And then with the ending thing, you know, I understand that this movie was mostly for the satire. You know, trying to correlate sort of modern capitalism and that sort
I
of
hate Tex-Mex cuisine.
With, you know, sort of the murderous sociopathic nature that is the other half his character is. You know, all of a sudden the ending happens and you're just left with, okay, well, did this happen? Did this happen? And sure, it's cool. We get to kind of discuss it later on, but
what the hell?
You know, was this movie a waste of my time or not? That's kind of how I look at it.
You see, I was thinking, I mean, this movie is totally one dimensional, but I do think the characters in it add a little bit more depth to it.
Well, it's fucking hilarious. I mean, you cannot deny this movie's comedy, even as dark as it is.
Yeah.
I mean, blowing up a cop car with a 9mm round made me laugh.
Well, see, okay, that's the other thing is, you know, like, was this all in his head? Because he kind of looked at the gun like, wait, why did it do that?
And by the way, that chainsaw falling that far, you're going to hit her with the back end of it, not the blade. Mm-hmm.
I loved that scene. That was one of my favorite scenes, because it just, you've got a random dude running naked with a chainsaw, which, for one, where do you find a chainsaw? And then two, nobody hears a chainsaw and goes, hey, Ma, what's that?
Right. Well
I love his face. He's like,
and that face he makes when he does it, he's just like,
oh, yeah. What I want to bring up is I love how much detail was put into the beginning, as John was saying, there's two acts to it.
He actually followed that freaking routine?
I bet he did.
Yeah, every day while the filming of that movie, he followed the routine that he sort of lays out.
Yeah. I mean, the details that they put into there, and one of my favorite scenes, John pointed out one of the other ones, but one of my favorite scenes is when he's with the cards, when they're all sitting around the table and they're all talking about the cards and the little idiosyncrasies that they've put into their cards and just his look and his expressions that Christian Bale put into that scene alone.
So what did you guys think of narration? Because traditionally, at least for Real Flix Reviews, you guys have kind of panned kind of narration. See, I really liked the narration because I thought it added a depth that it needed. I also thought it made it more of an introspective comedy,
which I think really goes into his psyche.
It was the only depth that was really in the movie, because the whole thing is through the protagonist's eyes.
Yes.
You know, you're looking at it through not only his eyes, but his perspective, and that sort of lends to the perspective and really draws the correlation between, you know, his cutthroat business and his sort of cutthroat, you know, albeit fantasies, most likely.
Yeah, I really liked it, but I mean, traditionally, I've always been, yay, narration, because I think a lot of the times movies need it because it's missing depth that you cannot add anywhere else.
Yeah. I think if there wasn't narration in this film, you wouldn't understand the character as much.
Well, yeah, you wouldn't know him at all. There's the whole movie.
Yeah. I don't think this movie would be funny, by the way, either. I mean, there's some funny scenes, but I think the narration adds kind of a layer to help you laugh about things.
Yeah. And I also want to bring up, did you recognize Jenny from Kids?
No.
Ryan?
Chloe.
His secretary. I forgot she was in this.
I did not realize that was her.
Really prominent in sort of independent flicks. Definitely done some high profile stuff. I think she was in Zodiac. I don't know why that just popped into my head, but she's been in a few sort of big things, but huge, huge, huge in the independent.
Yeah, she's actually on a Netflix original called Bloodlines now as well.
Hmm.
She's a pretty prominent character in there.
So I
very good actress though.
Yeah,
I mean the whole cast was really, really awesome.
Yeah,
you know, wow, I'm going to start blanking out.
The other thing I wanted to add while Ryan's trying to remember is the sets in this were really well done.
Yeah.
There wasn't a lot that I saw that I thought that did not point to the fact this was supposed to be an 80s movie. From like the little things to like the stereo in Christian Bale's place.
That was a really top of the line stereo, people.
It was.
Lots of money. Lots
of
money.
To the restaurants, and the sets are amazing. The lighting was really well too. I mean, there was nothing about this movie that screamed bad.
Stylistically, it was really fantastic, which is great because it really makes the movie worth watching between the performances and the style, because the story is thin. You know, it really is kind of thin. And it just kind of leaves you with this, oh shit, this Fight Club moment of like how much of this happened, how much of it didn't, but you really never get the answers even on a second or third viewing.
And I will add, I can never see Willem Dafoe now without thinking of Boondock Saints.
Yes.
So
well, who can?
This seeing him in here made it even funnier because the back of my mind, I'm thinking of him in Boondock Saints.
Well, and also I want to point out this for people that may not be familiar with it, but I have a really extensive cooking background as well, and the Tex-Mex stuff that they were getting into with the cuisine and everything, that was really, really big at the time, and that's still stuff that they teach to this day, but the way that the waiters were going around and repeating the same jargon over and over and over again, that was a nice detail, I thought, for that, for the world they were introducing you to, which was the investment bankers and how much money they were rolling in at that time.
Which is funny because you never actually see any of them work.
No, they didn't do nothing.
Yeah, they basically, it seemed like they just collected paychecks and had attractive secretaries.
Yep.
That's true. I was thinking about that. All Christian Bale really did was listen to the cassette tapes.
Yeah.
Well, you know, they did coke in bathrooms. By the way, that was one of my favorite scenes. When they're trying to do coke in the bathroom and the dude in the next stall was flipping them shit for it.
Yeah. Shut up. I'm trying to do drugs. Coke over here.
The guy in the next stall thinks it's all right. Yeah.
And they managed to find the most scuzziest bathroom in wherever they were in order to do that.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Oh, well, as soon as the guy walks out, he's like, they don't have a good bathroom to do coke again. I was like, oh shit. But I mean, it really, everything about it sort of sums up the 80s, or is at least to kind of give you that, again, sort of that cutthroat mentality of these people and how, you know, just pretending to be one of them is driving this dude insane.
I think this movie by itself, if they did everything else poorly, I think the story lends itself to be funny. I do think that the little touches like James and Ryan were mentioning, I think adds a lot to it to make a pretty well-rounded movie for what they were trying to make.
Yeah.
Well, it was based off a novel, which isn't surprising, you know, when you have this sort of deeply satirical material.
So for me,
you know, somebody's trying to adapt this, and apparently the book, if they would have done it sort of right to the T, would have been absolutely. Mary Harron actually went to the MPAA and had to argue and trim down a couple of things because they wanted to give it an NC-17. But really, for the amount of production hell this fucking movie went through, between I think like three directors, a couple of screenplays,
a couple of options
to a couple of different studios, I mean, it was ridiculous. Mary Harron actually got fired from this movie. I believe they hired Ollie Stone. He left due to some conflicts, and they rehired him.
So for me, I still stick with 3.5. I can't quite give it a 4. My favorite section of this movie is pretty much the first half. There are questions now that I have, like Paul Allen, what the hell is his name? His apartment, you know, the guy they went into the end.
Jared Leto.
Yeah, Paul so Allen. 3.5 I stick with, James.
You know, I will always give this one a 4 just because, I mean, every time I watch this film, I am blown away at how fantastic of an actor Christian Bale is.
Oh, yeah.
Every time I watch this, I am just blown away by his acting ability. And just on that alone, that adds at least an extra point for me because I would probably be down to a 3 for just some of the random weird crap that goes on in the film.
Ryan?
You're still sticking with the 3.5. I mean, there's amazing parts of this movie. It's no wonder that it's sort of a cult favorite. You know?
It's sort of
for people who like dark comedies. But really, even aside from sort of the genre lovers, it, the satire is as such that it can be watchable to anybody if you actually sort of understand where they're going with the satire, which is hard in some movies.
And it's spot on. So, yeah, ladies and gentlemen, I do want to let you know we do have a Facebook page. If there's a movie that you want us to do, please let us know there. We also now are available on iTunes, Podbean, Stitcher, and more. So we're going to switch right now to doing our TV show, which was James's pick. We did Luke Cage Season 1, Episode 1, and here's the description of it. Given super strength and durability by a sabotage experiment, a wrongly accused man escapes from prison to become a superhero for hire.
You know, I gotta say something. You know, I'm still in the middle of this season that Netflix has released, and honestly, I think I would have picked episode 3, but to jump people into episode 3, you would be so confused. So that's why I just defaulted to episode 1. It's a slow, slow burn.
The thing that really surprised me about this TV show is every superhero television show traditionally starts with an origin story.
Yeah.
Almost always. I mean, all the Supermans have, all the really cheesy Batman ripoff things have. I really applaud just jumping into it. Matter of fact, Arrow does, The Flash does, Supergirl does.
Just about everything, which is actually kind of funny why this Daredevil. One didn't. Yeah. It being such a sort of a, you know, underground character. So you would almost figure they would start with that. I do like when people just sort of like jump you into the world and sort of let you kind of unroll the film yourself.
And I really appreciate that. I mean, I actually saw the origin, how this guy had got his powers on YouTube, but
see, that's what I was going to say, is it almost would behoove somebody to watch one of those things you should know before watching Luke Cage videos, you know?
Yeah. But see, for me, I actually appreciated it. I mean, it was one of those few moves that they've done in television that I'm like, thank you for not treating me like an idiot.
That's actually
To me, it really was the hype that kept me going through the first episode. Because like James said, it is kind of a slow burn. And if you don't really know where it's going, you're kind of like, okay, where's this going? Like,
I was a fan beforehand. And that's why when they actually said they were doing Luke Cage, I actually got excited. But like I said, I mean, I was not expecting as slow of a burn for the first episode.
I thought it was really well done.
I thought the pacing was great, but for somebody coming in with no knowledge,
right?
I think it's a really slow burn.
I think you have to be a comic book fan or remotely love the genre at all.
I think you have to kind of trust Marvel at this point.
Because for me, like, the pacing was beautiful. I loved how they introduced certain major characters in the story, like the barbershop guy, like the club owner.
Other things going on, you know, the introduction of the characters, but not even like really who these people are, just kind of like, hey, this is sort of the world that you're involved in. Yeah. See, the soundtrack kicked ass, by the way.
Oh, I would say that I agree with Ryan. One of the other things I appreciated, they're going to let you learn more about these characters as you go on the story. A lot of these things just give you a lot of, you know, as James says, right at the beginning, and there's no character development. They just are what they are.
I love the idea of the reluctant hero also. So yes. It's got points right there.
It's kind of a trope, but it works really well in this context.
For audience members out there who aren't going to jump on YouTube, they don't tell you his origin until episode 5 or 6.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And they really just kind of like sprinkle a couple of things here and there, but just enough to kind of sort of whet your appetite for the future.
And I'm kind of irritated at myself for giving in to the, I want to know, so I looked it up on YouTube. But this was really well done. I'm looking forward to a crossover with Iron Fist.
Yeah.
Well, I definitely think that's got to be their season 2, right?
Yeah. Because you've got, you know, Power Man or whatever exactly comes.
Well, I mean, they had Luke Cage a little bit in Daredevil, I think.
Same guy?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure
I think he was in Jessica Jones.
That's it. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry. I know it was another Netflix one. And I dropped Jessica Jones.
I didn't like it personally, and it was nothing the fact it was a female protagonist. Nah, I just thought it was shit.
Yeah, I just didn't think they put enough effort into it, honestly.
No, not at all.
Sorry.
So, I totally dig it. And next week is Ryan's pick, so Ryan, you're up.
Okay, I'm picking sort of a lesser-known I was trying to think of something. You know, we're kind of getting into deep cuts nowadays. Done a shit ton of these. Pick sort of a lesser known Daniel Craig movie. I was watching Spectre the other day, and it just kind of put me in the mood. Layer Cake, I believe, 2002.
Nice. I was hoping you were going to say that one.
Not a lot of people have seen this flick, and I think a lot of people should see this flick.
Yeah. Nice. Not a lot of people know that he did this one.
And right.
I'm one of the few.
And so what's the TV show we're doing for next week?
TV show to me was pretty obvious. Westworld, man. Season one.
Yes.
HBO.
I will say that one of my favorite actors I heard was in this movie, so I really want to see it more. And it's Michael Wincott.
Oh.
Yes. Isn't it?
So I, as soon as I saw that, I'm like, well, I'm going to have to find this. So, ladies and gentlemen, I gave the movie American Psycho a 3.5 out of 5. James gave it a 4 out of 5. Ryan gave it a 3.5 out of 5. Next week, we're doing Layer Cake starring Daniel Craig and Season 1, Episode 1 of Westworld.
Yep.
And as always, thank you for watching.
Goodbye. Thank you.